Assalamu alaikum, everybody. My name's Aisha Beg. I'm a psychotherapist, and recently I've been looking into Unani Tib to see how it will fit in with my psychotherapy. But I found it's got such its foundations and it's got such vastness in why it was originally formed was in the foundations of diet. Now, I thought, you know what, this would be amazing if we could bring this forward for Ramadan. I benefited so much from seeing how much changing your diet it can help you in your mind, your body, and your spirit. And they all go hand in hand. Mashallah, we've got amazing scholars who talk about the spiritual benefits. But one of the things that we all struggle with is understanding the foods that we eat. And also, like, you know, we've got, you know, there's children who are new to fasting. We've got elders who are ill and they just want to fast all the time, but they shouldn't be fasting. And just energy levels, really. We've got long fasts here. There've been summer fasts. So it was just bringing the teacher, the principal of Kutum College, who runs the Unani course, forward, and you know, he's you know, happy to come forward and do this podcast with me today and discuss, you know, how we can make the most with our diet, inshallah. So assalamu alaikum, Dr. Bukhari.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I'm going to tell them a bit about you because you're not going to do it. So Dr. Bukhari, mashallah, he's been a practitioner for the last 20 years. He's studied worldwide and he's got a lot of tools in his box, mashallah, because he looks at a person as a whole and sees different types of treatment. So from studying in the UK to Pakistan, he's done Chinese medicine, Fasad Hijama, Western nutrition, homeopathy, mashallah, the list is endless. So Dr. Bukhari, I've benefited so much. I know my clients have benefited so much. You know, and I just thought, you know, if you could inshallah explain a bit more about what we can do in Ramadan to just get the best out of it, because we know the spiritual and the diet go hand in hand. Yeah. It affects us what we eat. You know, sometimes we've eaten too much and we can't pray, or we've got no energy to pray and do our ibadah. We've also got one of your students on, because I'm a layperson, so I'm going to ask the layperson questions. But I've got Areej on with us today. She's a second year student at Kutum College that Dr. Bukhari runs. And she's going to ask you the more technical questions, and I'll ask the questions of somebody who doesn't know much about it. So over to you, Dr. Bukhari.
Well, I mean, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate that. And I hope that this podcast can be of a benefit to everybody. And I want to just, you mentioned something about some people are like, quote unquote, dying to fast. It sort of took me back when I was a child, and when I was, I think, 6 or 7, and I really wanted to fast. Me and my brother used to really want to fast. My brother was a year younger than me. And we used to sort of like our parents used to stop us from fasting. They say, oh, no, you're too young. Mm-hmm. And we would secretly fast. And so when the fast was broken, you know, opened, we would just sit there because they would feed the people who were fasting at first. So we were like just waiting for, you know, we were waiting for people to finish so we get we fed. So basically what happened was our mother spotted us, you know, like, oh, this is, are you fasting? We said yes. He said okay. So then they would feed us, and so I was thinking that, you know, we look forward to fasting as Muslims. In terms of the physical benefits, there are a lot of physical benefits of fasting. Mm-hmm. Obviously we look for the spiritual aspects of it, but there are tremendous, tremendous physical benefits of fasting, and I'm happy to go through them soon with you guys.
You know what you've just said about you as a child? I actually was thinking about the elderly when they're like, you know, keeping the fast and they've got blood pressure and diabetes and all sorts going on. But then I've just thought my daughter does the same. And when she was about seven, she'd get up and cry because she wanted to fast. So, yes, you know, it's about children as well, because we sometimes forget about children here.
Yes.
And different ages and new to fasting. So it'd be interesting as we go along to ask you those questions.
Yes, sure, sure.
So, Areej, over to you for the questions.
Okay, assalamu alaikum. Hope everyone is well. So I'm going to start with the Unani Tib question. So according to Unani Tib, why is fasting beneficial for the body and spiritually? Why is it beneficial?
Yes, so obviously I'm going to talk about the physical aspects of it. So a little bit about Unani Tib. So Unani Tib is what we call the four temperaments or the four humors. It's an ancient system of medicine. There are three major systems of medicine, the Chinese system, which is the TCM, and the Indian system. And then this system, which is called Unani Tib. Unani means Greek, and Tib means medicine. So that's everything really, the Middle East, Europe, and then parts of India, where this medicine is practiced. It's called the four humoral theory or the four temperament theory. In other words, it looks at something called the mizaj or your temperament. You know, when you might have noticed your parents or your grandparents saying to you, don't eat that food, it's too hot for you. Don't eat that food, it's too cold. Not necessarily cold or hot in its by touching it, but what effect it has on your body. For example, nuts can be considered to be hot, or chilies can be hot, or other things can, you know, like milk is moisturizing, those are type of things in terms of food. So that's in terms of temperament. And this is something well known to the world, and also well known even in time of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And if you may have heard that the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam used to eat dates with a cucumber. Or a melon, because of the temperament of the food, of the dates being hot and moist, and the cucumber being cooling aspect of it. So to negate the heat of one against the other, and there are hadiths to mention refer that, to be honest with you. And so in terms of the benefits of fasting are a lot. So in terms of physically, when you don't eat anything for 6 hours or more, it gives the body the opportunity to basically go into something called the cleaning phase. It starts to gives an opportunity for the body to start repairing things, and regulates of things like waste products, and also releases something called the human growth hormone. That is a hormone which basically allows repairing things, muscles, tendons, ligaments, and bones, and that type of thing. So that's in terms of the sort of the medical benefits. And there are, you may have seen some television programs where there was a doctor who I think he was pre-diabetic, and he wanted to find a way of avoiding going on diabetic medicines. And he found that the best solution was to fast twice a week. Which and so there are many, many benefits. So there is an ayat in the Quran, Surah Baqarah, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that you fast for a fixed number of days, and but it's in the Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala saying it is fasting is better for you if you only knew. So the doctor was you may have seen that program, the Dr. Michael Mosley. So he is the one that talked about the benefits of fasting. There are many benefits, as I say, for dementia. It helps you for example, dementia is one big thing. Diabetes, Alzheimer's, Yeah, because they've done studies on mice with Alzheimer's and dementia.
I have a question here about you're mentioning diabetes. Now, is this for pre-diabetics?
Yes.
If somebody's already got diabetes, how would fasting impact them then?
Yes. So if somebody already has diabetes, you have to be careful about fasting. And you have to see your medical practitioner before you start fasting.
I remember you mentioning something about in the back in the days when obviously we didn't have GPs and the Hakim was the actual GP.
Yes.
And you had to go to the Tabib and get this information of actually I can fast or you can't fast.
Yes, that's right. So he had to make the assessment. The thing is, we're not allowed to prescribe, in this country, we have certain legal restrictions, what we can say and what we can't say. Definitely fasting will help you, even if you have diabetes, but you need to see your practitioner first, whether it's your tabib or your GP.
And that would probably go for most things like blood pressure.
Absolutely.
Anybody with heart conditions. So absolutely. Just being mindful of, if you've got a condition, a pre-existing condition, it's always best to check with your doctor before
Absolutely. I mean, there are definitely will help you with blood pressure, definitely will help you with diabetes, but we have to say that you need to first, it's like exercising. Suddenly, you decide to exercise and you haven't exercised for 20 years, you should check with your GP first.
Yeah, and build it up slowly if you can.
Yes.
So any more questions, Arij?
Yeah, no, so it's very interesting because obviously from that, it just tells us that fasting allows the body to detox and cleanse itself. And it's almost kind of allowing the body to kind of protect itself from any further illnesses. It's very interesting.
It is.
The physical benefits. If there's anyone with any conditions, for example, like you've discussed with diabetes, anyone that has any kind of mental illness or any kind of other kind of conditions, how would that impact them if they were to fast? Is there any kind of negative impact that fasting could have on certain individuals?
If somebody has a certain health condition, fasting may be difficult for them. So that's why, so in according to Islamic law, you need to see a physician, and then the physician will then guide you if you can fast or not. But most people can fast. Most people will benefit. As I say, you should check with somebody whether they have mental or physical condition that they should, because they may be on certain medication that they need to take. They may be on insulin, for example, or they may be on some medications for their mental health. They've decided, okay, well, I'm not going to take this medication during fasting. That's going to be a detriment to them. So we need to be responsible. But the guides, sort of the advice that we're going to give today is general advice for majority of people.
What advice would you give as a general guideline on how to prepare for fasting? What would be your general top tips?
Spiritually, because it is a spiritual thing. So you need to prepare spiritually in Rajab and by doing astaghfar. With the word forgiveness. And Shaban, which we basically is when we do our salawats, which are prayers, as many as we can. So that's just from a spiritual. As I say, I don't want to necessarily separate the spiritual benefits as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. But physically, we should prepare ourselves by reducing the intake of sugar, for example, caffeine, nicotine, and that type of thing.
So it's just like a slow weaning off process, isn't it? SubhanAllah, that we've got from Rajab to Shaban to Ramadan. Yeah. So weaning off caffeine, sugar, nicotine. What else, Dr. Bukhari? I think some people don't know when they,
Your biggest thing is sugar, because sugar is a drug, in effect. Especially white sugar in particular is a drug, and it's addictive. Mm-hmm. So reducing sugar is your first opportunity, first thing that you should look at. And definitely caffeine. So you notice that in the beginning, the first few days, you get these headaches.
Yeah.
When you fast. That's because your body is have these withdrawal symptoms from caffeine.
Mm.
Yeah. So definitely, I would say if you just do those, that'd be sufficient, because trust me, this is just reducing sugar and caffeine and nicotine is one of your biggest difficult things. If you can reduce those, you probably conquered half the problems or more.
That's quite interesting, because my husband gets a lot of headaches. So thank you for that. It'll be of great benefit, because he's always got a headache, and it's because he has a lot of coffee during the day and he misses his caffeine fix. So that's some good advice there. So we've got the, you know, how to build up and how to wean off and things slowly to get to Ramadan. Whilst, you know, the start of the fast, everybody's got a lot of energy. It's the start. Yeah, everybody's really excited, you know, and you're raring to go. And then there comes this honest, and I'll be honest for me, like, you know, after a week, there's this 3 days, it's like this dip. So, you know, and you know, my energy levels are quite low, and people in my house, everybody's energies are quite low. So what would you recommend there? Yeah, how would we, you know, our energy levels fluctuate, right? And according to what we're eating.
Absolutely.
So how would you keep that consistent? What would you recommend in the first couple of days?
Well, I mean, generally, I would say I would think you're probably leading up to sort of the types of food that we should be eating during Ramadan, I would say. Yeah. Because obviously they're long hours.
Yeah.
You know, you're starting sort of, you know, early in the morning, and you're finishing sort of 8 o'clock, you know, up here in North, 8, 9 o'clock really. And it's been longer, isn't it? But you know, when it was the summer, it was back to almost 10 o'clock.
Yeah, 20 hours then.
20 hours, yeah. So really, you'd be looking to include foods with fiber, containing fiber, and foods, because the fiber foods take longer to digest.
Right.
Even though it's a carbohydrate, it takes longer to digest. So slow. These are slow digesting foods. So digesting foods last up to 8 hours.
Right. Any examples of any high fiber foods? Because I know the products have changed now. Yeah. So what was high fiber back then? Yeah. My husband was reading an article about fiber, and he was explaining that it's barley, apparently, that has the most fiber.
Yeah. So digesting foods with fiber, but it takes about 8 hours to digest. And so fast digesting foods, which, you know, they maybe take only 3 hours or 4 hours to digest. So for examples you're looking for is, yeah, barley is definitely one of them. So you talk about grains and seeds like barley, wheat, you know, that's whole wheat, not the white flour one, oats, millet, beans, unpolished rice. You know, most of the rice that you have is polished, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what they call complex carbohydrates. They're still carbohydrates. In fact, everything's either protein, carbohydrates, and fats. But there are complex carbohydrates. And this is what you call fiber carbohydrates. So bran-containing foods like, you know, whole wheat, grains, seeds, vegetables like green beans, marrow, peas, spinach, methi, yeah, that's fenugreek. So things like with leaves with such as beetroot. Beetroot's good. A beetroot has got a lot of iron in there, because a lot of people have iron deficiency, especially people who are like vegetarian or semi-vegetarian. Right. They're not getting the iron from the meat, so beetroot is a substitute.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's good for the younger kids as well.
Yes.
I know my daughter gets quite weak, and so, you know, increasing a beetroot would be excellent. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and fruit as well. This is dried fruit.
Dry fruit.
Yeah, apricots, figs, prunes, and nuts like almonds, etc.
So, you know, when you were talking about earlier about having, like, you know, hot foods like dates are hot and cucumbers are cool.
Yeah.
Would you say that we would at the start as well, would we need more hotter foods or how would we combine it?
Yes, so this is general sort of foods I was saying, but obviously we have to adjust them to based on something called your temperament. So yeah. Each of us have an individual temperament. To know, in other words, whether you are hot and dry, for example, which we call choleric, or cold and moist, which we call phlegmatic, or a hot and moist, which you call sanguine, or you could be cold and dry, which is melancholic. So those are four temperaments. And so the foods that you eat should be the opposite in general of what temperament you are. For example, if you are hot and dry, you should be eating less hot and dry food and eating more cold and moist type of food. And the thing is, if you want to know what your temperament is, you can always go to my website and there's a quiz which tells you your temperament. Just answer a few questions. I will tell you your temperament and maybe give you some advice on types of food that you can eat based on your temperament.
And would this still apply in Ramadan because you're fasting? Is this to understand what kind of food you should eat according to your temperament?
Yeah, of course. Your temperament is not going to change in Ramadan.
Right.
But on the other hand, you're correct, because you will be more colder because you've had a longer period of time where you'll be eating, won't be eating, basically. So your body is going to get colder. So you should be eating more warming soup type of things, or stock type of food to basically for heating your body, or even food which could generate heat. So that's why we notice after fast it's recommended to have dates, because dates are warm and moist because loss of heat in the body.
So this is really, temperaments is such it's an amazing way to look at a human and how physiology, and personality for me, being a psychotherapist. But it's just like a whole nother workshop, isn't it, Dr. Pukhari? If we go into that, we won't get through the Ramadan stuff. So inshallah, I think we should arrange a podcast for that and something, a workshop, inshallah, that'd be amazing.
We plan to do that, inshallah.
So just coming back to, we've looked at some foods and how dates, like you said, warm up your stomach. The one big thing about our fasts, they're quite long here in the UK. Thirst is a big issue.
Yes.
And it's very hard to, by the time you've had your iftar, because then the time's so short, so fajr, to just, it's hard to just have your iftar and your suhoor. Yes. So what would you recommend to, have a balance? What kind of foods would you recommend at iftari time to sahur?
Happy to do that. But if it's okay with you, I wanted to sort of mention the foods that you should avoid, because first, if that's okay, because the reason is that I've noticed a lot of people when they open the fast eat the wrong types of food. And you may have noticed that a lot of fried food is eaten after fasting. When you open the fast, sorry.
Yes, that's a given, isn't it, in Ramadan? Yeah. And we don't eat it all year round, but we eat it all in 130 days.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to explain that, because that's what causes issues, you see.
Right.
The fried foods are unhealthy and basically they should eat them sort of limited. So they can cause, they're the ones that can cause indigestion, heartburn, and weight problems. Yeah. And so basically avoid fried and fatty foods. You can eat more in seri and in the morning, but less in the evening if you can, because and also avoid sort of drinking tea at seri time, because you pass more urine, and you will lose the sort of the mineral salts in your body, and that's why you feel more like dehydrated, because we drink tea, but unfortunately tea dehydrates you. All teas dehydrate, they dry you out, so it's better to have water.
Okay. Would you recommend any herbal teas? You know, obviously some people need that hot drink.
Yeah.
I know my family members, it's the cup of tea or the cup of coffee is like a must, but what's an alternative there?
Yeah, I mean, definitely don't have coffee. Absolutely. Coffee is very, very bad for you, basically, especially when you're fasting. If you want to drink some teas, I mean, herbal, as I say, all teas without question are going to be drying.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't matter if they're herbal or not. Okay. However, obviously certain teas, obviously it's going to put like fennel teas be very good for you. Mint tea will be good for you. Mint teas be more moisturizing. It might be better for you than mint tea. Mint tea has that benefit, with hydrating. But generally speaking, most teas are dehydrating, except for a few. Fennel tea, mint tea, coriander tea, those type of teas. Would you?
I need a cup of coffee, and now I'm thinking, okay.
Not coffee.
I'll be honest. I need a cup of tea or coffee. So I'm going to be avoiding that this Ramadan because I do feel thirsty.
Absolutely.
That we've moved away, and I think I have chamomile. Sometimes to you
chamomile's
know,
good, yeah. Chamomile's fine,
chamomile's okay, okay. Mainly that tea, and I think my dad makes a green tea with lemongrass.
That's okay. But generally, I'm talking about the black teas in particular. But when you're fasting such a long period of time, it's going to cause you some issues. But coffee, some teas you can have, but you could maybe you're allowed one cup of tea, but not. You know, too many teas, and then herbal teas alternative is a good alternative, but certainly that was just a general rule, okay. However, coffee absolutely not, okay, because coffee is considered like a poison to the body, and it tries to that's why people say, oh, I can go, in other words, the bathroom, because the coffee thinks it's a poison, so it starts to get rid of from the body. Wow. Now, I said that too, and there was a gasp. In the whole auditorium, it's like, when I said you can't have coffee.
I'm doing the same thing, but I'm not gasping.
Generally, there are some temperaments and some conditions where we do give coffee. Yeah. Okay. You know, but generally, that's only an exception. Okay. I mean, the scholars in Yemen, they have coffee to help them to keep awake to study at night. Yeah. So in those situations, yes.
So that's a quite interesting, and it'll be quite debated when everybody hears this, like me, who loves, I love coffee. So, you know, for me, it's like, okay, I'm going to live without coffee. So the weaning process comes in here, doesn't it?
Yes. So I think we do also have a number of health issues, don't we, during fasting. I'm only telling you based on my clinical practice that people come to me and ask me certain questions. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, during Ramadan, a lot of people get constipated.
Yes. And I think people suffer from severe constipation and bloating. And is that to do with refraining from food?
Yeah.
Or is that to do with the food that they're eating as well? Or is it a combination?
So the cause is eating too much refined food, or too little water, and not enough fiber.
Right.
So basically, to avoid excessive refined foods and intake, and try to increase your intake of water, and more, you know, bran in your baking, bran flour when you're making, say, for example, roti. The other thing that people tell me that they get is like indigestion, a wind. There's a lot of wind. People feel that they got a lot of wind. But in other words, the thing is that's more to do with overeating.
Right.
So, for example, in Taraweeh, when you're after, you know, Isha prayer, you do Taraweeh, yeah? And, you know, there are people next to, in that line where they're praying, and they're burping because they've eaten so much. They can hardly stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they probably eat that, probably they haven't eaten that much in the whole month, they eat in one day.
Yeah.
And they just, that's not the objective of fasting. Hmm. The objective of fasting is to eat less, in effect. And also they're eating like drinks like colas and carbonated drinks, and lentils can cause a lot of gas. Cabbage can cause a lot of gas, spicy, fried, fatty food. But the idea is to drink less, so eat less and drink water away from food.
Okay.
And maybe include more ginger.
So what does ginger do? How does that help?
It reduces the gas that produces certain foods. So if you say a food which produces a lot of gas, like lentils or cabbage or something, you need to add more ajwain or ginger to mitigate some of that gas producing from that particular food that naturally produces a lot of gas.
So trying to kind of neutralize it almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
What else do people get? Headaches. You're asking me earlier. Aisha was asking me about headaches earlier. Mm-hmm. That's your caffeine, your coffee, basically. Mm-hmm. Withdrawal symptoms. Also, basically, lack of sleep, and obviously sleeping at times. You know, because you have to wake up 3 a.m, 2, 3 a.m, to fast. Yeah. Basically, cut down your caffeine, Aisha, and all those listening.
Is it also due to dehydration as well?
Dehydration. Yeah, definitely. You can have herbal teas, caffeine free teas. Yeah, and try to get enough sleep if you can. You know,
that's a very important factor. And I remember sitting in your classes, and one of the lifestyle factors is your students always, and you always ask about sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, is there any advice? And I know it's not practical because everybody's working, but those who are able to take that time out, how would you manage sleep through it?
So really, if you can, you get your siesta in. So there was midday sleep. So before Dhuhr or just after Dhuhr. That's Sunnah as well, apart from Fridays, yeah?
And how long would it be?
Okay, good question. I would say 45 minutes, maximum an hour and a half. Yeah. And I know if you're working, people who listen to say, well, I'm working, how am I going to get sleep? So even if you sit in your car and, you know, put something over your eyes and get 10 minutes, that'll give you a power boost. So, you know, sleep is obviously a whole topic, but the sleep that you get at between 10 and 2 in the morning is what we call double time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you sleep between 10 and 2 a.m., 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., you get about equivalent to 4 hours sleep. And then from 2 a.m. to Fajr time, it's equivalent to 1.
Right.
Hour, yeah. And after Fajr is negative sleep. Sleeping after Fajr is harmful. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's harmful. So you should just wait until the sun comes up and then you can sleep at that point. I know people are saying, how is that practical? But the point is, this is I can only give you advice what is beneficial, whether it's practical for you or not. That's what you have to see.
That's a different story, isn't it? Obviously, with the working day.
Yeah. So in traditional societies, people would sleep early, they would read Isha, and they would go to bed. And they would get up before Fajr and do their Tahajjud prayers, and then they do the Fajr, and then they will wait for the light to come, and then they would go to the fields. And then they would work in the fields, and about 11, 12, they'd go to sleep. For an hour or so.
You're not eating lunch if you're fasting.
Yeah.
So just getting a little power nap would be
exactly a good idea. Exactly. Yeah, get 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour. I guarantee you, you'll feel a lot better.
So going on from weight, and obviously you see a lot of these things around nowadays where they say, oh, how to lose weight during Ramadan.
Mm.
Is that something that you would advocate or you think is a good thing, or... is there something in Unani Tib that would say, actually, you can do this and lose weight? What would be the recommendation in terms of fasting and weight loss?
Inevitably, you'll be losing weight. Yeah. Yes. Because you're not eating the same. Assuming you're not eating the same.
You're not eating the fried food.
Well, some people are eating more during Ramadan. So that would be really, you'll be... you know, missing the point. So what I do is that I eat sort of same what I eat for the first 10 days, the mm-hmm. same. And the next 10 days, I reduce the quantity of what I eat. Mm-hmm. And the third portion, the last 10 days, I reduce it further. So, by the third, the last 10 days, I'm probably only having a couple of handfuls of food, in the morning and evening. Hardly eat anything, less and less, because you actually, there's a mythology created that people think, oh, eating food is going to make you bigger or stronger. It's a myth, because if you think about it, the Sahaba lived on a date between them. They used to suck a date between them. Mm-hmm. And they would then fight wars.
Mm, yeah.
Some of these battles were in battles in Ramadan.
Yes.
So it's and also it's a thinking. So if you're thinking that this is a way of reducing weight, we're not looking to, let's say, reduce weight. You are losing, obviously the primary is a spiritual benefit, but you will lose weight if you don't eat more than you normally eat, and ideally eat less than you normally eat.
Yes.
Okay. This is your opportunity to lose weight. So my personal example is that I used to have 2 spoons of sugar in my tea.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously it was just habitual that I was just drinking tea, because everyone was drinking tea. So I was drinking tea. I didn't even know why I was drinking tea, but everyone was drinking tea. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I reduced the frequency of drinking tea. It's just to be 1 or 2 to 2 a day. And then Ramadan, I reduced it from first year, I did 1.5. Second year, I did 1. The third year, I did half. I brought down to about a quarter, and I couldn't go any further than that. But the thing is that use this opportunity to get rid of all these addictions. As I said to you, sugar is an addiction. So these teas and coffee are an addiction. You don't really need them.
Yeah. It's amazing how when you're talking about the diet, how it mirrors a weaning off process, which is in fact even from the spiritual element, you try to increase the Quran, you try to increase the ibadah, so it's like it's working in the opposite direction, isn't it, really?
It is.
So weaning off bad habits or things that we don't necessarily need to increase things that we do need and things that are of a greater benefit beyond our understanding.
Sure.
So it's quite interesting to see how the loop, it feels like a loop, something working like a loop.
Yes.
Body and your in the spirit, it's like a loop. Sure. I just wanted to ask about, there are a lot of younger girls and older people and generally, who get quite weak. And could just, sometimes just having that first bite because they've not eaten anything, they're not able to eat. So we're looking at the people who will eat excessively or have kind of certain kinds of addictions or, need to wean off caffeine or sugar. But there are people who generally don't eat and feel quite weak because they still want to fast. Is there any recommendation for those people?
Okay. Yeah, so the best thing to do is to eat, when you open your fast, to eat a little bit.
Right.
Or maybe just a date.
Right.
Right. Or if you can't have it, you can have a date, have some water or some salt or something to break the fast. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then go and pray and read, pray and in and read, do your ibadah, acts of worship. And then your stomach will start releasing certain juices, especially if you have salt. When you have a little bit of lick of salt, it starts activating the juices enzymes within the digestive process. And then if you leave a gap and then go back, and then you'll be able to eat, inshallah.
Excellent. Are there any type of drinks? So we've got the dates, we could do some salt. Is there any type of drinks that could benefit?
Water,
cold water, warm water?
Oh, yeah. So that's a whole other topic about types of water, but and to make it simple, you would have room temperature water. Never have cold water; it's harmful. So if I have also created some recipes, which if your listeners are interested in, and I can send that to anybody that's interested, or we can put it, send it with the podcast.
Yeah, so we will attach it to the podcast. There's a food list, a recipe list. Is that right, Dr. Pokhari?
Yes. Well, yeah, I've got some recipes I've created for with that they can eat during Ramadan.
Oh, that's excellent. Now, I think we've covered quite a bit there. So thank you, Dr. Pokhari, for sharing your wisdom and sharing your knowledge. Inshallah, I know it's going to benefit me during Ramadan. And I hope it benefits everyone who's listening, inshallah. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Hope, inshallah, we will do some more podcasts. And I think, you know what it is, we've done a very general, looking at things in a very generic way. And I think, we should do something. You know, we are looking at doing a workshop come May, Dr. Pokhari, on temperaments. So it'll be physiological understanding of your constitution and your temperament and what kind of foods to eat, what suits you, what doesn't. It's a full day workshop and it's going to be fantastic. I actually highly recommend it. It's open to everyone, not just people who want to know about their own constitution, but as a therapist, I think it's brilliant for when you work with clients to understand their temperaments and other holistic practitioners and therapists. So there'll be more about that soon, inshallah. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Areej.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.
Waalaikumsalam.